Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is Investor Resources live radio program. You want to call in. The number is 800-465-8770. The number doesn't change all day long for any of the call-in shows. It should be easy to remember. But it's 800-465-8770. And if you want to talk about the stock market, not that there's anything there that should be causing you concern.
Nothing to see here, no.
we'll be glad to entertain a question. The market, your portfolio, even if you have something you're concerned about. You had a recommendation from your friendly financial advisor in the corner office down the street, and you're not sure whether that was really for you or for them. Well, give us a try. Let's see if we can add some depth to your understanding of that particular recommendation. As it is for right now, we are watching a continuation of what has been happening almost all year long, but was quite absent in most of the last decade and a half. And that is fear.
Year.
And we're approaching Halloween, so I guess it should be appropriate that we have some fear on the table here
to discuss. It's that time. That's right. It's that time.
And most
like
people
said for the go ahead, Don.
Well, most people think October is really the month to be fearful. September, which we've just been through, and was justifiably full of fear. But October doesn't escape it. But it's not as bad as September. At least that's the hope we have.
Historically speaking, right.
So is fear good? Well, it's all a matter of perspective, isn't it?
Always. And there's always, you know, the like you said, recently the fear has been a fear of missing out. The only thing people were afraid of was missing a big move or missing a big move in Bitcoin or, you know, everybody I know just got rich buying, you know, NFTs, and I'm missing it out. I'm missing everything. And it was just the fear of missing out. So the money was heading into the market. The money was heading into crypto. The money was heading into NFTs. Almost anything anybody put out there, someone was buying it with abandon. And that doesn't always stay the same, though. That changes.
Well, that's certainly true. And it's just a function of where you are in the cycle. If you go back to Gordon Gekko on Wall Street, it's greed. And to quote, greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Here we go.
Well, it is good, particularly if prices are cheap and you can overcome your fear to take advantage of low valuations. The problem that people have is trying to figure out if low is still lower than where we are today.
Right. That's always relative, and it's always hard to discern what, well, is this cheap right now, or is it going to get cheaper, or is it going to get more expensive and I will have missed out? What are you going to do? And that's one of the big unknowns in investing.
Well, and you just mentioned Bitcoin. Well, the Bitcoin Strategy Fund is down 71% from its high. So
yeah,
there's been a lot of damage, and Bitcoin was sold as, now this is a solid currency replacement for the dollar, and it is an inflation hedge. Let's see, now last I checked, inflation's up almost 10%.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin's down 71.
So Yeah, there's a screaming example right there of why you need to ignore the narrative and look at the data. The narrative from the Bitcoin people, from all the cryptocurrency sector, is like what you just said, Don. Hey, this is a great new currency. It's not. It doesn't really get used as a currency. And it's a great hedge against inflation. Again, it's not. And all you have to do is look at the data and the big drop in Bitcoin, which coincided with a huge increase in inflation. And just looking at the data, that is not true. But unless you're checking, if you just believe what they're telling you, you know, you're going to believe the opposite of what reality is. And that's how far out of whack things can get. And they can stay that way a long time.
For a very long time. In fact, the current decline that we are in is the longest one we have had since the 07-09 market decline. I mean, everything else we've had has been short term, brief, didn't last long. Our hopes for higher prices came to fruition fairly quickly. It is not happening this time. And the big change is the Fed decided that inflation was no longer transitory. And they've admitted that they were a little late in realizing that.
Right. Again, they were believing their own narrative. And they could have looked at inflation numbers and said they were still saying everything was fine. They were still in easing mode when inflation was over 5% and on the way up. And they were still saying, nope, this is not going to last. Everything's going to be fine. It's like, have you guys checked the numbers that we're looking at? You know, because you seem to be disconnected. And eventually they had to admit, yeah, we're kind of off base here. We missed this. Why? I don't know. But they missed it quite badly. And now they're playing catch up. And that's where we are today.
And where we are today is right here on live call-in radio. You want to talk to us today, be part of the show. It's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And if you're a little concerned about the market, justifiably so in today's environment, you can get updated on our view of the market by registering for our monthly stock market update webinar by going to the website, irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the webpage, you'll see it says webinar. A couple of clicks, your name and email, and you will get a link to join us. That will be on, what's the date? November 5th. It's first Saturday of the month. And if you can't join us live, we will send you a replay link. In any event, for right now, the two emotions that are dictating short-term emotions, and boy, they are emotional swings, and ooh, that is the fear and greed. It's running a fever and having the chills at the same time.
That's exactly what it sounds like out there, yes.
Yeah, so the market is an S&P 500, which is what most people refer to the market as. It represents, it really doesn't represent the whole market. It's 500 stocks out of, on the New York Stock Exchange, there's almost 7,000 stocks. Plus you have more than 3,000 exchange traded funds. And then you have mutual funds and you have bonds. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. But when people say, well, the market, they either mean the S&P 500 or they're talking about an even smaller handful of stocks, the Dow Jones. 30.
Really small. Yeah.
Yeah, 30 out of 7,000 doesn't represent the entire market. But the S&P 500 now is over 500, excuse me, minus 25% on average return from the January high. And that's the largest downturn since March 2020, which was forced upon us by central banks and governments panicking at the appearance of a new flu. But as I said a moment ago, it's the longest one since the 07-09 housing crisis that we had. We've had 13 years of positive returns. That's where the fear of missing out developed. It can't go any higher, but it did.
And just
it can't go higher than
matter.
That. It still went just higher.
Just keep buying. Yep, everything's fine.
Well, and part of that was driven by tech stocks doing so well. The NASDAQ 100 is down, oh, who worries, 32% this year. Mm. It has given back all of the gains from last year, and it is back to October of 2020 levels. And as I've been doing my end of week analysis, it does not show any sign of getting ready to bounce. It may bounce like it did this last week. It was up three strong days in a row, and then reality set in.
And that's what you were talking about with the, it's like having the fever and the chills at the same time. People are so ready to jump back in right now that if there's any signs of life at all, it's like, here it is, time to buy again. But we're in a bear market right now, and we're in an increasing interest rate environment, and it's not the same. And when you go back all in again, there's a very good chance you're going to get burned doing that. And people are starting to understand that, but not yet. And that's why you get these big market swings based on virtually nothing. It's just a big emotional reaction to, oh, this is over, time to get back in. Doesn't look like it, not yet.
So Wall Street does not want retail investors to start selling what they own. They want to keep them in the mutual funds. They want to keep them in the ETFs. If they own individual stocks, they don't want them leaving, because buy and hold, so goes the theory, is the best way to win in the market. And if you're big enough like Warren Buffett, where you can lose 50% in a position and still hang on to it because it doesn't affect your lifestyle, yeah, okay, good for you.
Right.
But for most of us in the marketplace, and we don't like that. That really affects our financial future. And you have the last couple of years, we have something like Kathy Wood's ARK funds, the ARK Innovation Fund, ARKK, had phenomenal returns, only to be down 75% this year. And still having buy-the-dip investors coming in saying, yeah, that looks cheap to me as it goes lower. That seems cheap to me as it goes lower. It has just been a continual fake out. I mean, you're sure you saw that, but then maybe it was an illusion. And so far, that's been the case. However, the American Association of Individual Investors, they're getting really discouraged. the ones who are now thinking we're in a bear market, I think is as high as 63%. And that's usually a contrarian indicator. It's a contrarian indicator when the Federal Reserve is trying to stimulate the economy and keep us from going into a recession or get us out of one instead of causing one. And they've told
Correct.
Us that's what
that's
they're
going
to do.
That's the big thing. Yep. They said, look, that's where we're heading. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to slow things down. We're trying to have more unemployment. That's what we need. We need the economy to slow down. And it's not recognizing as an investor that the environment you're in has changed significantly, and just continuing to invest the same way you did over the previous 10 years when you almost couldn't have made a mistake as long as you kept buying. That environment is not here any longer, and you really need to adjust what you're doing and the way you think about it, or you can get just steamrolled by the market, because we don't know how long this is going to last. No one does. We just know that it's here now, and all we can do is hang on and wait for that market environment to change again. But right now it's not. The Fed's fighting inflation and nothing else. And so nothing else matters. The market doesn't matter. Unemployment doesn't matter. Wages don't matter. We just have to get inflation under control. And the fallout is that that can really hurt the market, and you have to be ready for that. Other thing we have to be ready for is our first break of the morning. Time to get out of here briefly. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our next market update webinar on the calendar, scheduled for Saturday, November 5th, 9:00 in the morning. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and click that registration link. You're going to get an email back. There's a link in there. And then on November 5th, you just click that link. You will be live online with us. You'll be able to look at all the charts that we talk about all the time, kind of see what we're thinking about. We cover the economy. We cover markets. And we always have plenty of time for any questions that anybody who's on the webinar has. And we always get a great batch of questions. And so if you have questions about the market or investing or individual securities, even that you want a second opinion on, it's a great time to get that done. So again, you get that at IRIRadio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, we'd love to talk to you about all things financial. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, that's the Beach Boys, for those of us old enough to remember them. And the and the lyrics there are, stay, go, stay, go, stay, go. Wiping out, wipe out. Well, that's exactly the way investors have been treating the market in so far this year. I'm in. No, I'm out. I'm in. No, I'm out. I'm in. No, I should be out. No, it's up again. I should be in. And we have multiple charts. We turn around and take a look at them, and the reversals in very short order are highly unusual this year. Trend development has been almost non-existent. In fact, I was looking at the momentum issues, the number of securities that actually had momentum pushing the price either up or down. And for the New York Stock Exchange, which has about 7,000 issues on it, individual stocks, the number of stock symbols that were attracting enough buyers to qualify as a momentum run was 0.8%. So out of that 7,000 stocks, I know I wrote the number down somewhere. You know, it was 60 that actually had enough momentum to be enough activity to be classified as momentum movers. On the downside, it was 291. So it's almost five times more on the downside. And this is just Friday. On the exchange traded fund side, there's 3,200 in odd numbers. 38 were going up and 76 were going down. So roughly 1% up, 2% down. The rest of them are muddling along with investors trying to figure out, what do we do now, folks? But for Friday, it was a Beach Boy day. With a wipeout, with the NASDAQ was down nearly 4% in one day. That's a big move.
That's remarkable now, that happens on virtually no news. It just happens. Sentiment changes and they start selling, and it's like, well, the unemployment number wasn't quite what we thought it was going to be. Therefore, everything in my world changes. Let's sell everything. It's like, wow, you know, it's just decisions based on next to nothing, especially just one data point. It's like, we don't, like you said, Don, the problem is there's no longer term trends forwarding, and individual data points don't mean anything. It's where does that fit in what just came before it? What's the trend doing? And people are kind of ignoring that right now and making big changes based on one day's data.
Well, so the consensus seemed to be that the Fed really is serious. They are going to raise interest rates.
Right.
And the discussion now has shifted from, well, they'll raise them 0.75% and then start leveling off, to that's 0.75 in November and another 0.75 in December. And then maybe next year, they might level but not drop until we see some real slowing in the economy and inflation numbers falling. And all of a sudden, that's a shift in sentiment. Maybe we need to listen to the Fed after all.
That's not always true. A lot of times, whatever the Fed says, like, nah, but they're not going to do that. They never do. Well, this time they're trying to get everyone to understand that they're, like I said, but just earlier, they're only fighting inflation right now, and they don't want to fight anything else. It's just inflation, and they're looking at it, you know, as they say, data, it's all based on the data month to month, and they have no agenda. So if inflation stays high, rates are going to get higher until that stops.
We have Kent from Kent back on the line. He's a prior caller. Kent, you are on the line with Don and Perry. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Thank you. Hey, my question has to do with the semiconductor stocks as a group. And I know you don't predict, specifics and all that kind of stuff, but I've been looking at some of these, the Intel's, AMD, et cetera, and they have just gotten trashed on. And my feeling is that many of these are very, very good companies. And I know that, the greed and all this kind of stuff going on. But separate from that, what do you feel long-term has caused these stocks to rally from, pretty depressed prices? Is there something that the government has done currently, our debt load, interest rates, and all that stuff? What, simplify my question, what factors would you say would, in general, cause these types of stocks to go up?
Well, we'd have to reverse the conditions that have been driving them down, the ones that you just described. Intel has had, I would say it's had poor management. They have not been able to get their act together. And they are building a new plant. They used to be the leader in the industry. And that position is now been taken over by Taiwan Semiconductor, and that's going to be hard to recapture. They're the ones that are putting out, I think, the highest speed new generation chips at the present time. Intel's trying to get back into leadership. NVIDIA has done a good job. They've been in the gaming business, and I think they're trying to expand their application of their chips. But a big concern has been that a lot of this manufacturing has been done in China, and it's become a security concern, national security concern. And that has to be addressed. And nobody knows exactly how that's going to be done, particularly with the current administration, apparently on pretty chummy, terms with President Xi and his gang. There's no real, I don't know a common denominator here that's going to drive that up. Now, interestingly enough, the software industry, has been going through some real developmental changes and in looking at, the way the industry charts are developing. I think there's some, if we weren't dealing with inflation and higher interest rates, we're really looking at a point in time where we would normally see pretty good bottom development, and these prices would begin to turn around. But I just pulled up in INTC and AMD while I'm talking with you, and there's no sign on the charts that that's ready to happen for them. So
Among other things, it has to be some of these geopolitical things have got to be resolved, as well as the inflation and so forth. But when and if that is taken care of, or most of it, you think these stocks would have a reasonable chance of perhaps leading in terms of price increase?
Well, I will say that the semiconductor industry, which could easily have some other younger companies become the leaders, that the industry itself will be in high demand, and it will be an area in which you should be able to find some attractive companies with high profit potential. But the big names that we're familiar with are not necessarily going to be the leaders over the next 10 years. They are old technology, and it's really expensive to turn a big company around. So some of these companies are actively acquiring what we would still classify as startups or venture capital size companies that don't have a lot of market share, but they have great technology. They just need more time and money to bring them to market, and then a company like AMD or Intel might turn around and say, we'll buy you out and make you a division here so that we can dominate this area. That is happening. We just don't see it in the headlines very often.
Okay, understand. Okay, all right. Appreciate the answer to my questions. I'll stay tuned. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Kent.
Thanks, Kent. Yep.
And that frees up a line. The number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Kent obviously pays attention to the market. He always asks good questions.
He does. Yeah, bright guy. Glad he's out there.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I mean, this morning I've been working on my end-of-week report, and the software industry is one of those industries that looks like, in a normal market environment, it's really developing a strong bottom, and there's some real opportunity for software companies to have some massive moves. And I hadn't done the work on semiconductors. There's a lot of different areas of semiconductor. When you start looking at data, it breaks down into a lot of smaller industry groups. But we're not in a normal bull market environment. We are in a bear market environment, and your buy the dip mentality is an emotion that has to be overridden with data. You have to, if you're going to buy something, you have to understand why I am buying this, and if there's more downside, I'm willing to live with it at this price.
Right, and you also have to get used to, if you're, you know, like we're very defensive right now, so if you are not largely in the market at this point in time, and then like last week you get a few huge up days, you have to just bite your lip and say, you know what, I see no way this can last. So I'm not really missing out on anything other than a short-term move. And it just becomes difficult because everybody feels it. Everybody feels those emotions of the roller coaster that the market is these days. But you have to disconnect from that. And that's why it's so important to have those portfolio rules. What do we do? How does this work when the market is doing things like this? And that can really help you avoid making that big emotional mistake, because anytime you trade emotionally, you're almost always doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, and you want to avoid that as much as you can. We are at the bottom of the hour. Time to get out of here for a little break. I'd like to remind everyone that we have a weekly email newsletter, Week in Review. Comes out most Mondays, and it's just to look at the previous week's financial news, give you a little insight into what's going on out there, and let you know what things are important and what things you can probably just ignore. If you'd like to begin receiving that, all you need to do is send us an email. Send that email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email. We will get you on the list, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this.
Well, we played that bump music last Saturday because of Friday, and I'm playing it again because of Friday. Friday was a nasty day. In fact, since Kent called and asked about Intel and AMD, I said I had the charts up. Both of them did what the stock market did last week. We had a really bad week last week. Monday, the market gapped up. It took a big jump over the weekend due to foreign markets that trade and dollar currency adjustments. So it gaps up to a higher price, and it had three up days, and people are getting excited. This looks like, man, we should be back in the market, but the charts didn't confirm that. And so Thursday and Friday were down. Friday, Intel was down more than 5% on Friday alone. And AMD was down nearly 10% on Friday alone. And my assumption here is that that's just this reframing that the Fed is serious about fighting inflation when last week people were looking at the Bank of England that had quickly stepped into the bond market and started buying bonds again, providing liquidity to the market. And they said, oh, the Fed's going to do the same thing. No, they didn't. And apparently,
and they're not gonna. Yeah.
They aren't. Yeah. Every one of the Fed regional presidents that was making a speech somewhere in the country last week said, no, we're darn serious. No, we are going to fight inflation. And until inflation comes down, interest rates are not coming down. And Mr. Market said, huh? You got to be kidding me. You're not going to pivot right away? And the Fed president said, nope, we're not.
Not even thinking about it. Not yet. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You understand what transitory was wrong last year? Well, we are not transitory about fighting inflation anymore.
Not a bit. They're on the, yeah, you fooled me once, you're not going to fool me again. So they're just going to keep, like I said, I think they're focused on inflation only, and they're going to wait until that number starts to reverse, and hasn't happened yet. And I wouldn't expect any relief until it does. So this is one time where you can kind of watch a single indicator and say, what's going on with that trend? Because that's where the relief is going to come from, and probably not until then, regardless of what's going on in the economy or in the investment markets.
And with wages going up, the expectation for inflation being resolved should, in your own mind, should probably be pushed out a couple of years. Now, it actually took Paul Volcker and Reagan's administration almost 10 years to really knock the legs out from underneath the inflation stool of the 70s. I mean, once the wages start rising, and the railroad union's threatening strike, I believe. They haven't had enough parties sign on to the wage, onto the new agreement, to know that the 24% wage hike is going to be enough. And right. assuming that gets signed off on, every other union is going to ask for a similar raise, and then everybody else, in order to keep people from going to the union, is going to have to hike wages up. And the Fed can't do anything about that. All they can do is try to reduce your ability to borrow money and make your credit card so expensive that you'll begin to live on a budget and quit stimulating the economy. And when enough businesses lay off people and close down, the Fed will be able to do the highly desired pivot and start lowering interest rates.
Mission accomplished at that point. Right. But that's what they need to see. And especially business borrowing. Businesses need to stop trying to expand their business. And the Fed's going to keep pushing those rates up until that happens. And so, you know, we covered that in the past webinar about that's what the Fed is attempting to have happen here. And they're not really concerned about whether they're going to cause a recession or not. And a big part of the market drop at the end of the week last week was people beginning to understand, oh, no soft landing here. We're going to get a recession, and the Fed don't care. And that's where they're at. They're like, nope, inflation is too important to get rid of. If it causes a recession, it does. And we're just going to live with it. And, you know, that's their stance right now. And until there's a substantial change, because they're all, like you said, Don, they're all reading from the same speech. No one is dissenting. Everyone's saying, yes, that's what we're doing, and that's what we're going to keep doing. And so that's an important thing to watch, and, you know, adjust accordingly in your investment life.
It would be easier for the Fed to get where it wants to be and for interest rates to start falling if the administration was working with them, but they're not.
Yes.
They're on the opposite side of the table. In fact, the comparison is made to Jimmy Carter's inflationary problems and the fact that Carter didn't get reelected. Reagan came in and Paul Volcker changed. Well, actually, before Reagan was elected, Volcker said, we're going to change this and get things started here on fighting inflation. Jimmy Carter was actually reducing the size of government. He doesn't get any credit for that because it hadn't taken effect yet. But Reagan got the benefit of reducing regulations and reducing government bureaucracies. And Reagan just simply took those policies and expanded them, got government out of the, out of our lives, reduced the cost of operating government, took old regulations that made no sense anymore, so we don't need that, and closed the books on them. And that freed up the economy to actually put capital where it made sense to invest. And we got new industries that mushroomed and brought employment and brought more taxes, even at lower tax rates. It brought in more revenue because people were willing to do more work if they got to keep more of the money. And that is something that the current administration does not understand.
That lesson's been lost. Yep.
it totally lost on that side of the aisle. It's just absolutely amazing. However, I'm not sure that everybody on the GOP is absolutely committed to a Reaganomics kind of policy. I mean, there's a lot
That aisle gets thinner and thinner every day. It's really hard to tell the difference some days. So we're not getting a lot of help from either side right now.
Well, anyway, back to the market here. So we need to think about how do we change our mind. Technical analysts often scoff at the idea that a 20% decline is a bear market. And there's nothing magic about that. The real issue is that when things start to decline, how low will it go? And where do you draw the line? So from a technical chart standpoint, you draw a lot of lines. You say, well, that's as far as I go. It goes there and I'm done. And then it rallies and you say, oh, nuts. And then the rally fails. And you say, oh, nuts again. And that has been this year. That's not a normal year, but then we clearly aren't in a normal year. Between the Fed and the administration at opposite ends of the economic spectrum. And that's not going to resolve until we get an election that changes the powers that be in D.C. We will continue to live with a high level of volatility. And the volatility, which we have not really had a lot of over the last decade and a half, has been because the Fed has provided liquidity. The Fed has been a buyer of bonds. Anytime the market started to drop, didn't have to drop too much, and they would step back in, buy some bonds, put some more liquidity in the market, and the market would go up. So if you put a stock chart up on your monitor, the squiggles in the S&P 500 or the Dow or the NASDAQ aren't very big for the most part between 2009 and last year, 2020 an exception. Fourth quarter of 18 was that got down to almost 20% on the S&P in the fourth quarter. But generally, they just followed the trend line all the way up, and everybody got very confident. This year, it's not working that way, and the volatility is bigger, and the Fed is a seller. And it raises the question, who's going to buy the bonds that the Fed decides to sell? Now, some of them,
That's always the question. Yeah, in a bear market, that's always the question, who's going to be the buyer? And that's why it's so important to understand we are in a bear market, and that higher volatility is just a marker that we're in a bear market. So anytime you see these huge 2% up days followed by a 4% down day, that kind of volatility happens in bear markets. So even though the up days were there, that's another indicator that just tells you, hey, we are in a bear market right now, and act accordingly. Don't believe that we're going to have some extended rally to new highs from where we are, because right now there's just not enough buyers. We can get a little short-term run, but nothing sustainable and nothing that's going to push the market to new highs. And until something else changes, mostly the Fed, stopping raising the rates. And like you said, Don, they used to just supply a ton of liquidity. to keep the squiggles down, like you said, I think we should have a new squiggle index. We had to invent that. And now that you've identified that technical investing term, watch the squiggle. We should copyright that and get on that pronto. But as long as the volatility is there, that is just another indicator. We're in a bear market, and everybody needs to be cautious with making a big bet on the long side, saying, well, I think this is over, we're about to take off. Boy, it's really tough in this environment for that to happen. And caution is what you should be looking at right now.
2 points before we go to break here. Sure. One is, we're talking about the big drop on Friday and the prior Friday, and we got this big rally on Monday. When we get a drop as big as we had on Friday, don't be surprised if we get a gap up and a run the first of the week, just like last week, that rolls over. And the Fed is not providing liquidity. They are reducing liquidity, which is not a positive for a sustained advance. Can we go ahead and take our last break?
All righty. We'll get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our next market update webinar on the calendar scheduled for Saturday, November 5th at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to IRIRadio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Just head to the webinar page, click that registration link, and you will get an email back to be ready to go for November 5th. It's a great time to get a kind of a feel on what's going on in the market. We always let you know what we're doing with our client portfolios. What are we looking at? What are we buying? What are we selling? And like I said, there's always plenty of time to get your questions answered. So it's a great time to get a second opinion on anything that's got you a little confused out there. And as Charlie Munger said recently, if you're not confused right now, you're not paying attention. So there's plenty of confusion. We'd like to try to help get rid of some of that. So you can register again at IRIRadio.com. We've got a whole segment remaining here this morning. I'd love to talk to you this morning. If you'd like to call in, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, that's true. The strong do survive. It's usually because they have controlled their debt and they have built up significant cash reserves. And when interest rates were quite low, down in the 2% range just a year ago or so, many of these big companies borrowed to the hilt. Mm-hmm. They could tie up money for 30 years at less than 2.5%. And people are willing to lend them the money, and they're saying that's a bargain. It gives them tons of cash to survive hard times. But it doesn't mean their stock is surviving really well, because that's driven by other things besides just the fundamentals. And so we have, if we take a look back a decade ago, the S&P 500 was about $12 trillion. And yet this year, six of the major tech companies combined have lost $4 trillion in market value. They're still big companies. They are probably going to survive whatever bad news lies ahead of us for the next couple of years. And some of them may, in fact, remain market leaders. But this is a period where small companies, if they can maintain access to capital, can actually get a leg up on the behemoths and develop a niche product that skyrockets them into leadership in their particular area, making them takeover candidates. Or if they're really savvy, they'll do something like Bill Gates did when he developed the DOS operating system. Instead of selling it, he licensed it and became a billionaire by not giving up ownership. And too many young innovators just sold outright. They said, well, shoot, I have $100 million, $200 million, $300 million. I mean, what more do I need? And they walk away, not realizing they're walking away from becoming a 2-4-10 billionaire instead. They just needed a little
more time. And the attitude was, well, I'm just going to sell this company and then go start another one and build it up and then sell it. And, you know, it's like when the real estate market's hot, you know, you buy a house, you just flip the company. And then all of a sudden it changes. The economy changes, the amount of money out there changes. And once money gets expensive, that buying and selling other companies on a whim goes away. You're not flush with cash, and if you're going to borrow some more, it's going to actually cost you much more to do that now. So those companies get much more expensive, and that's why they say, you know, in a bear market, not only do things lose value, opportunities are created if you're paying attention, and that's true in the investment side also. This is where valuations can really work to your favor going forward, even though they're not helping you out right now. You have to weather the storm, make sure you're going to make it out the other side, and then you get to participate in the recovery. And that's the good part. You just have to make it there. And so you don't want to make a bet big enough that it can destroy your portfolio and leave you with nothing going forward. So that's why it's important to be prudent, important to pay attention, and important to look for opportunities, even when everything looks like it's pretty dire.
So the normal definition, well, there's multiple definitions, but one of the standard definitions of a bear market is having the market or individual securities above the 200-day moving average.
Right.
And as
right.
of this week on the tech side, the NASDAQ 100, only 8 of the 100 companies are above the 200-day moving average.
That's unreal, huh?
And for the market as a whole, as tracked by TC2000, which is a software we use or data stream we use, only 22% of the New York Stock Exchange is above the 22-day moving average. That leaves a whole lot of companies in dire straits as far as their stock price is concerned, which affects not only investors, but it affects the CEOs, the CFOs, the CIOs, because their compensation is always tied to stock price performance, which does give them a little bit of a conflict of interest when it comes time to report results. But if they get caught, it's called fraud, and that does have nasty repercussions. But at these levels, when there's actually evidence of a turnaround and that the pivot is happening with the Fed, then the profit over the following 10 years historically is extremely strong, because stuff is just so cheap right now. It's just not that it won't get cheaper before the pivot comes. And you don't want to become part of the 80% club. Well, you hadn't heard about the 80% club, huh? Well, the world, as we've said earlier in the show, has turned upside down. I don't know, depending on how you look at it, I guess you could say it's turned right side up. Everything that worked during the pandemic is unraveling on the other side of it. It's just amazing how many things are at nosebleed levels. You have stocks, good companies, Square down 80% from its high, SoFi down 81, Shopify down 84, Wayfair down 90% from its high. I mean, these are not numbers that happen in bull markets. These are numbers that happen when business isn't working right, and it's going to take a lot to turn them around. So
those are bankruptcy numbers. Those are numbers of companies going out of business. And all it is right now, anyway, some of those companies are not going to go broke. Some of them may. But those are just valuation changes off their high. The high was artificial because of the global shutdown in reaction to the pandemic. And now these lows are oversold also. So it's going to be interesting to see who can hold it together and come out the other side. Those are going to be the winners going forward. But there's no way to tell who the survivors are going to be, and there's no reason to bet on. There's no reason to go in and buy something that's down 90% saying, well, how much worse could it get? He goes, well, it can get 10%
worse. You go to zero.
You can lose even more if you'd like to try that. So, we think it's a better idea to watch and see who begins to turn around, see who begins to attract cash before you try to buy anything in that 80% club, because that's a growing sector right now, the companies that are down 80%, and you don't want to get in that too soon or your portfolio becomes one of the members also.
So I use the Beach Boys Wipeout song for a bump to come back in earlier in the show. And looking at a chart in front of me here, what got confusing in the market for all of us was we had this 17% recovery off the June bottom, and it hit the 200-day moving average, and it went, I don't like that.
And like a brick wall, yeah.
And it turned right back around, and that depends on which index you look at. They've closed below the June lows. That's not a positive sign.
Not a bit.
And the AMD and Intel that Kent called about, Intel, I know, is building a new plant, I think in Texas, but it's here in the United States. This is called onshoring. It kind of addresses the issue of we got stuff in China and we can't trust those guys over there with our technology that's going to run our internal systems.
Yeah,
you can't trust a communist. Who thought that?
What the heck? Yeah.
But that brings another problem for the Fed. So we onshore this new work. Guess what? U.S. citizens don't work for Chinese labor levels. Apple can't leave China because Apple sells a ton of product, not only inside China, but around the world. And part of what makes their expensive product not any more expensive is almost forced labor in China. Now, Apple's not using forced labor, but it's priced almost the same. They can go to Vietnam, but they can't move all of it there. They can't come back to the United States because wages are so much higher. They wouldn't be able to sell the product. So there's nearshoring, which is let's go to Mexico and fight the cartels. but it's not as expensive as being in the United States. But that's also an inflation supporting project where, from a national security standpoint, it seems like it needs to be done on all sorts of stuff. So this problem is going to be persistent for some time. We are at the end of our show here. You want to talk to us during the week? We have a magic phone number for that. It's 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Register for our Week in Review. Week in Review. Anyway, we're out of here. God bless you, your family, United States of America. Have a great weekend.